before this evening's talk, somebody showed me the latest edition of Time magazine, and there's a picture of somebody with the caption "Mindfulness" on the front of that magazine. So I thought, well, that doesn't actually say very much in the magazine about mindfulness, but at least it's now become a very popular word used in medicine and also psychology. And so today I'm going to talk about mindfulness, a deeper, more broader, more powerful understanding of that word, because I do know that many psychologists come here on a Friday night and they get all of their useful information on how they can do their career. And I don't mind that at all. It's true, you know. Somebody even last Wednesday, they saw that magazine come and they say, "Are you upset, Ajahn Brahm, that this is Buddhism? And all these people are exploiting sort of all these teachings of Buddhism and they're taking it out there and making money out of it." I'm not unhappy at all. In fact, I'm very happy, simply because the whole purpose of these teachings is to stop people's suffering, to get them happier, to give them peace, more meaning, more happiness and harmony in life. And however that gets done, it's marvelous, it's beautiful, it's incredible. But I'd also say that, you know, if you come here on a Friday night, you get it from the source. And it's also a bit more powerful, because we invented this stuff, you know, mindfulness, 2,500 years ago. But the problem is, in Australia, if you call this religious, then people don't want to come. So there's just marketing, that's all it is. Instead of calling it meditation, because meditation means, you know, Buddhists, Hindus, religion and all that sort of stuff, give it another name and it becomes popular. Even again, talking to one of the old members from years and years ago, she was teaching in, I don't mind saying it, it's a long time ago now, Rolling Stone Primary School, year sixes. And she came to our centre in the old days and she learned meditation, realised how wonderful it was for her. So she tried to teach this to her grade sixes, now in Rolling Stone. And it was so fantastic. Except that she had to be smart enough, don't call it meditation, because there were lots of Christians were in that school, and if they heard that the teacher was teaching meditation, then that was really evil, that was something wrong, that was trying to take their kids away from their religion, and would obviously get really upset. So instead of calling it meditation, she just called it quiet time. Just give it another name and it works. And just the results of that, she kept me informed what was going on. That she would start at the school year, and the school year is going to start next week, so any teachers here, maybe think about introducing this quiet time. Started off with just about 2 or 3 minutes at the beginning of the year. By the end of the year, they'd increase it to 15 minutes. The whole class of, you know, 11, 12-year-olds doing 15 minutes of meditation by the end of the year. And the results were incredible. I know this because I remember later on being invited to the school to give a talk to the teachers and a few of the students as well. And the principal of the school at that time, he said, "Look, I'm a committed Christian, and I get some of my parents, you know, they suss out, they get to know that this is not quiet time, this is Buddhist meditation, and they come and complain to me." But I say, "Look, I'm supporting this 100% simply because it works. The kids in that class, their academic performance goes up. But it's not just their academic performance goes up. There are all these extra byproducts, just their social skills were improving as well." And this is so important in the school. It's not just about learning maths and science and English and Indonesian or whatever. It's also learning how to live with one another. And I remember this lady, this teacher, gave me an example. She said that once, you know, often happens, an argument breaking out in class, you know, a couple of kids getting a bit upset at one another. And whenever that would happen, one of the children would say, "Miss, can we have quiet time now? Right, quiet time, everybody." And everybody would sit down and put their hands in their lap, close their eyes and watch their breath for about 10 minutes. And that would solve all of the problems. And I remember as soon as I heard that, I thought, why on earth can't we have that in Parliament? The Speaker said, okay guys, girls, quiet time. And just meditate for 5 minutes. Why can't you have that in your house? You can do that. Any kids in here, you see your mum and dad argue, okay, quiet time. 5 minutes, you've got to watch your breath. How many problems will that solve, you know, in our world? But even more than that, they found out that people were getting more, it was even little boys, more in touch with their emotions. They were being kinder to one another. And that was one of the most amazing things that this little teacher told, how just simple exercises in being quiet, being aware, being mindful, being peaceful, how that improved little kids' social cohesion and being more emotionally intelligent. And I start off with this and then I continue on by explaining how it actually works. Because a lot of times, I mean, you understand this, we are out of control. Basically, we don't know what we're doing. And by the time we figure out what we have done, it's already gone out of our mouth. We said something terrible to the people we really care about. And we all do feel really terrible afterwards. You know, I shouldn't have said that, but it's too late. Or we've done something, you know, which was, you know, a spur of the moment. We made a choice, and it was a stupid choice, and we really get into trouble for it. And so, and these are the problems which we have. Or sometimes we get really guilty or angry about something. And you all know by now, you know, you don't need to tell you by coming to a Buddhist temple, that anger first of all burns you before it sort of affects anybody else. There's an old simile of like getting angry at somebody is like taking up a hot coal and throwing at them, trying to hurt them. Yeah, it might sort of hit them, usually it misses, but it certainly burns you. So every time you get upset and angry, you hurt first of all. We know that. You know, fear and anxiety. You know, we know that we shouldn't be so anxious and afraid of things which happen in the world. We've been anxious, afraid so often, and it hasn't happened. This is my saying, that whatever you think is going to happen, it doesn't happen. If you're anxious and afraid something bad will happen, it never happens. It's usually something far worse. Or usually better, but never what you expect. So you all know that, but how come we can't do it? Now this is where the practice of meditation, especially this mindfulness, actually comes in. We actually become aware of actually what we're doing. And especially aware of our mental activities, how we're thinking, how we're reacting. And especially, this is one of the important parts of mindfulness, learning how to put some space between you and your thoughts, between the observer and your emotions. Put some space and gap there. Because once you can imagine, you know, this person listening to me, this being, if you like, you know, me, putting a space between that and what you're experiencing, and that actually gives you the opportunity to see and to even stop sometimes when it's not very useful. The simile which I give, which is very helpful to understand how this works, is a simile of watching a movie, this is for the girls, or a sports match for the boys. Have you ever, I remember, I was telling this in the retreat I just gave down a Serpentine. I remember going to the movies as a young man, and there were these, you know, scary movies. And in a scary movie, there'd always be some villain, some vampire or something. Apparently there's zombies these days instead of vampires. And they sort of creep up on somebody. I always notice, I don't know why this is, it's very sexist, but it's always a beautiful girl, this vampire or somebody creeps up onto. If you're old, fat and ugly, you've got nothing to worry about. It's true. It's always the beautiful girls get done by the vampires. And there's always, you know, when I go, I remember from my youth, maybe they still do it these days, I don't know, but there'll always be somebody in the audience will shout out, "Look out, behind you, vampire's coming." What a stupid thing that is. They can't hear you. The movie was shot probably in Hollywood, the other side of the world, maybe 10, 20 years ago, and all your shouting, they're not going to hear you. But still, you shout. sometimes that, you know, if it's one of those sad movies, you know, where the person dies, you know, the weepies, this is especially for the girls, you know, sometimes, you know, that they almost make it, they almost fall in love, but at the last moment, he gets shot by the one which I remember, because I don't see many movies, was the old West Side Story, where Tony and Maria, both from the opposite side of the tracks in New York, Tony and Maria, they fell in love. I think he was a Puerto Rican and she was Spanish or whatever. Anyway, no, one was Italian. Maria was Italian. Tony was Puerto Rican. And they were not allowed to get together. The two gangs did not allow it. And something happened. And somebody got shot. And Maria's brother was trying to get revenge on Tony. And Maria was searching the streets of the east or the west side of New York, trying to warn her lover, look out, someone's trying to kill you. And eventually she found Tony. He was under a lamppost. And she shouted out to her, look out! And at that moment, the shot rang out. Tony was hit, and Maria ran towards Tony and embraced her. And at that time, I don't know how this happened, a band struck up some music in the middle of New York City. I don't know where they came from. And there was this song, there's a place for us, somewhere, a place for us.
That's exactly what I did. I started laughing. My girlfriend started crying. I said, what are you crying for? Don't worry about it. And I said, you guys are not emotional enough. You know, it was just sad. I said, don't worry. I'm a Buddhist. I believe in reincarnation. She'll be reincarnated another half an hour when the movie starts again. It's only a movie. Why do you get so much involved?
Now, if you the guys, okay, now you can criticize the girls like that. But have you watched the guys watching a football match?
Shoot the ball! Shoot the ball! Pass it, you stupid man!
That's the rerun of what happened last week. Did you, any of you watch cricket or something? Watch the Australians who are supposed to be playing English. Did you start shouting at the screen? They can't hear you. They're a long way away, the other side of Australia. It's probably a recording anyway. But still, you get so involved, you start shouting, you stupid footballer or stupid bowler. Or umpire, you must be blind. Have you seen men shouting at the TV set? You know, the TV set is not interactive. It hasn't got a pair of ears. The referee or the umpire can't hear you. But why do you go shouting? It's because you get emotionally involved in these things. But if you give yourself some distance between the screen and you sitting watching it, then it's much easier. It's only a movie. I don't need to get emotionally upset. I don't need to shout, look out, there's someone catching you behind. I don't need to get emotionally involved. I can let it go when there's that distance between you. So next time, if you really want to do this, because sometimes you like getting emotionally involved, that's part of the fun of the cricket match or the football match, you know, being losing. If you didn't lose, then you would enjoy it when you win. That's what Shakespeare said. Remember, it's better to have loved and lost than never to have lost at all. It's really true. That's not what Shakespeare said, but that's what he should have said. But anyhow, when you're actually sitting there, and you see this over there, you can laugh if you want, you can get involved, but you don't have to. You have this beautiful sense of freedom. Now imagine that's, you know, your boss at work, shouting at you, criticizing you for something you didn't do, bullying you. Now if you really get involved in that, you will get emotionally caught up. But be able to stand back, it's just a stupid boss doing his stuff. nothing to do with me. I'm listening in here, and this stuff is going on at a distance between me and those words. Then you can get perspective. You can let it go. Now, how to do this? Another simile, you know, putting space between you and these things. And this, again, tells you just how these teachings, which you hear here, they go off and people make a fortune out of them. I was in Singapore last June, July or something, and I was at a conference, and there was one person who was saying that one of the four breakthroughs in psychology, which was ways of dealing with people's problems, all mindfulness-based therapies. And this one therapy, this guy in Sydney was making his fortune out of it, was a simile of the hand. How big is the hand? And he said, the problem with people is they put their hand right in front of them like this. So all they can see is their hand, they can't see anything else. And all you really need to do, not get rid of the hand, put the hand where it belongs, at the end of the arm. Then you can see your hand, and you can see everybody else as well. Those of you who've been coming here for years, I've been doing this every other week. But now, last year, somebody in Sydney is making a fortune out of this, the symbol of two hands, he calls it. But you hear it here first of all, and this is about mindfulness. Because what mindfulness is separating you, the observer, and what you're looking at, getting some perspective. Because when it's really close to you, just when you're actually watching that movie, or you're watching that sports match, you're actually in the screen, you're actually in the action. That is why when you're watching that movie, it is like you're on the set. So you really think you can tell the girl, look out, there's a vampire behind you. You really believe, if you're watching that football match, that you can actually shout, because the ref is just right there, that you can shout at him and tell him, that's not offside, that was a goal. Whatever it was, you get absorbed into the screen. But if you can separate, then you've got some control. If you can separate with your emotions, putting them out there, rather than right in front of you, you find it's amazing what you can do. You can let go of these things. Oh, it's only your boss being a boss. I say a boss being a boss because that's what bosses are like. It's just like dogs. I better be careful because I'm a boss. That's what dogs do. Dogs bark. That's why, you know, if you get married and your wife nag, 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 what do you expect? That's what wives do. They nag. There's one... They do. There's one of my friends. He was going up north, you know, working in the mines for 2 or 3 weeks at a time. And he said he really missed his wife. You know, 2 or 3 weeks at a time, you know, you get used to your wife, you love your wife, and he said, really missed her. And I said, look, if you really miss your wife, this is what to do. He said, next time she argues with you, you know, get your iPhone on, record her. Now, don't let her know that you're recording one. No. Why didn't you kill her? Why didn't you do this? Why didn't you do that? Record her. And then when you're up north in the mines, you miss your wife, press it. Then you won't miss your wife anymore. Same with your husband. If your husband's off business somewhere and you miss him, just, you know, record him. Even you can video him when he's watching the football or something. Just how crazy he is. But this is just what guys are like. And all of you girls, it's great being a monk because you come and tell me about what your husbands get up to. And then the husbands come and tell what the wives get up to. And you know, I've heard it so many times before. You think your husband is special. But somehow or other, I don't mean special good. If it's special good, you don't come and talk to me. It's always special bad. There's something wrong with him. Can you fix him, Ajabra? Look, they're all the same. They are. Same with the wives as well. My wife, she's like this. She's like this. Yeah, exactly. That's what wives are like. Dogs bark. Crows go ga ga ga. Pigs go oink. Wives go nag, nag, nag. Husbands say, I'll do it later. Yeah. because when you understand what's going on, then you know you don't get so involved. So you can actually separate. And when you separate, oh, it's just a wife being a wife. It's just a dog being a dog. Do you really get upset at your dogs? You know, when they sort of do dog stuff? That's what dogs are like. And you love them for that. So when you're aware, you can separate yourself and see things as they truly are. There's no problems anymore. Dogs being dogs, wives being wives, husbands being husbands, politicians being politicians. Do you get upset at politicians? Have you looked in other countries in the world? They're just all the same. So that's just the nature of the game. So what do you expect? So whatever happens, when we get sort of some mindfulness, we can actually separate ourselves, see things, get perspective. Once we have perspective, much of the problem has vanished. And especially we have mindfulness, awareness of our thoughts. When we get caught up in our thoughts, then we're totally lost. But when we actually got perspective, the thoughts over here, it is like what's acting out on the screen. You know, all the thoughts which you have, you may be sort of, you know, thoughts of killing somebody, thoughts, you know, we do have that as well, you know, but please don't do it. But whatever, not in here anyway. We do outside, is your business, but please not in here. We have all these strange thoughts, fantasies, dreams, and stuff. And some of those thoughts, you know, can be very hurtful to you. You know, anger, guilt. Now take things like guilt. Sometimes we get so caught up in it. Put it out there. So not me being guilty. You can see guilt like the black clouds on a beautiful blue sunny day. So see it like that. Get some perspective. And then you think, oh, it's only guilt. It will pass. Or now, anger from things you did in the past. You know, you admit it, yeah, I'm angry, but it just comes, it goes. But when you get caught into it, that's when it really controls you. And you can't get a perspective, you can't let it go. You're caught up in it. So the same way, if you can just sit back and see these things happening on the move, if you don't like it, you can turn it off. But if you're really caught up in it, you have to see what's going to happen in the end. You can't turn it off. You get caught up. You're obsessed. This is the problem. Mindfulness stops that obsession. Gives you that gap, that space, where you can see things as they truly are, let it go, and you get incredibly free. So you see thoughts of anger. That's all they are. They're thoughts of anger. They come, they go. They're not that important anymore. And once you see them from a distance, they get less and less. Thoughts of anxiety. When they're really caught up in it, like in a movie, you really get anxious and then you're really lost. But put yourself over here, anxiety over there. Yeah, it's just anxiety, that's all. Just anxiety doing this anxious thing. You know it's going to pass. It's not you. It's not me being anxious. It's not me being angry. It's not me being guilty. I'm over here and this is stuff which is going on the screen in front of us. That is where you can get a sense of freedom. But more than that, once you get perspective, you actually see this force of anger, anxiety, fear, whatever, you can see them changing, which is a great thing. You're not always going to be upset. If you're depressed even, if you can get a bit of mindfulness, mindfulness is one of the best ways of overcoming depression. If you can put some space between you and the depression, it's not me depressed, it's not I am depressed, it's just I am experiencing some depression. But it's not you who's depressed. That just goes back, I'm just going to say this story again because this was powerful. I've never seen a criminal, never seen a person who's depressed, I've never seen a schizophrenic, I've never seen a Down syndrome person. What I've ever seen is a person who suffers symptoms of depression. A person who's done criminal things. I've never seen a liar, I've seen a person who's told lies. Basic story, open the door of your heart story. Two kids, supermarket checkout, one kid drops a jar of honey. In a parallel aisle in the supermarket, another kid drops a jar of milk, or a carton of milk. Both go smash on the floor, making a big mess. The mother of the kid who drops the milk says, "You stupid boy." The mother of the boy who's dropped the honey said, "That's a stupid thing you did." Huge difference there. You stupid kid. Another mother said, "That was a stupid thing you did. You're not a stupid kid, we did a stupid thing. Now, unfortunately, in life, we don't do that. We say, you're schizophrenic. Not that that's a schizophrenic episode you just had. He says, I'm angry. No, you're not angry. It's an angry moment you've had. But you're not angry. You're not stupid. You're not anxious. It's an anxious moment I've had. Anxiety's out here, and I'm this incredible being who's just watching this. If you understand that, and I've taught this so often, great story, you've heard it before, but it's just a brilliant story, I'm proud of saying it again. Giving a talk like this, Singapore Institute of Mental Health, the whole big campus, it was a conference for everybody there, some 50th anniversary or something. And afterwards, one of the professors, he's a professor, okay, head of the schizophrenia unit in Singapore, pulled me aside and said, great talk, can you please bless my ward? And on the way there, I asked him, how do you treat schizophrenia in Singapore? And that's when he said, I do not treat schizophrenia. He's a professor of schizophrenia in Singapore. He said, I don't treat schizophrenia. So what do? Just as you said, Ajahn Brahm, I treat the other part of the patient, which is not schizophrenic. And I was just so impressed. Somebody has understood the nature of the mind, and mindfulness, and Buddhism, and the nature of these things. And I had to ask this, even I knew the answer. I said, what are your results? Much, much, much better than conventional treatment. I know that. You treat the other part of the person. You don't treat the criminal. There is no such as a criminal. You don't treat the crime, you treat the other part of the person. You don't treat your anger. You treat the other part of you. You're aware enough to know there's more to you than that anger. There's more to you than that anxiety. Treat the other part. Anxiety is out here. I'm over here. These are moments of anxiety. But I'm not an anxious person. That was a stupid thing you did, but you're not a stupid person. Now, once you get that in your heads, the mindfulness can actually work. It gives you that space. You don't have to be a criminal. You don't have to be the anxious person. You don't have to be the schizophrenic. You don't have to be the depressed person. Your person feels, experiences many moments of depression. Be not a depressed person. Now that's a mindfulness. It gives you the space, it gives you the width to do something about it. But the next thing about mindfulness, which is not taught in conventional treatments, and it's one of my missions in the world to introduce this, is to add, yes, you're aware of these things, you get some space, it gives you some opportunity, now what should you do? Just knowing is not enough. Being mindful helps, but something else is really important. The simple thing of kindness. Add compassion, and then you get power with the mindfulness. How do I mean by adding compassion and kindness? Yeah, I've seen many prisoners. And when you see the prisoners, yeah, you know that they've done this terrible crime, but they're not a criminal. And the other part, you're kind to it. Have you ever noticed, whatever you're kind to, stays with you? If you're kind to a cat, it just runs across your backyard, you give it some milk, you've got the cat for life. It'll be there for a long time. If you're kind to a person in the office, they're your friend forever. They've done a wonderful act for you. So, you've done a wonderful act for them, and they will always remember it. Tiny acts of kindness are remembered. So this is what the kindness does. Number one, the kindness allows you to be mindful for long periods of time to what you're experiencing, and you find that whatever you're kind to softens and disappears. The key story, and again, please excuse me for saying this in the retreat, this is one of the most powerful teachings for meditation and also for life. The psychologists who come here, I know there's one or two, three or four, who kept on saying there's four stories they always use with their clients. This is one of them. Monster in the Emperor's Palace. lovely story, go over it very quickly. One day, an emperor was away, and into her palace, let's make it a female emperor for a change, into the emperor's palace came this huge, ugly, frightening monster. And all of the people were supposed to be guarding the palace, you know, the soldiers and ministers and other people working there, they froze in terror. They hid. They went under the table, whatever, to try and hide from this terrible monster. Allowing the monster to go right into the center of the palace and sit on the emperor's throne. And as soon as it sat on the emperor's throne, all the guards, they couldn't take that anymore. They said, get out of here. Who do you think you are? You can't come and sit in our emperor's throne. Get out. And those few angry words, and those few unkind gestures, the monster grew an inch bigger, more ugly, more smelly, and the language got worse. And that made him even more upset. So upset that they started making threats and saying really terrible things, but every unkind word, unkind deed, or unkind thought, the monster grew an inch bigger, more ugly, more smelly, and more disgusting. And this had been going on a long time. When the emperor came back, she took one look at this hideous monster, who was so huge, took up half the throne room, was so disgusting, and such a bad stench came off this monster, that even the maggots crawling on its skin threw up. They vomited. Not even maggots could stand the stench. But she was the emperor because she was smarter than everybody else. She knew what to do. Welcome, monster. Thank you for coming to visit. Why have you waited such a long time to pop in? Has anyone got you something to drink here? How about a cup of tea? How about we've got a new coffee machine? We've got latte, we've got flat black. What do you want? And this emperor was actually kind. She was so kind that every kind word, kind deed, or kind thought, the monster grew an inch smaller, less ugly, less smelly, less offensive. Everyone understood their mistake. Instead of giving this monster anger and get out, you don't belong, they were kind to the monster. About half a dozen of them went to the monster's feet and gave them foot massage. It's very rare for such an ugly, smelly monster to get a foot massage. But he enjoyed every moment of it. Have you had a foot massage? Reflexology? It's really nice. Other people massage its huge shoulders. Somebody asks, do you want a pizza? Can you get monster size, apparently, now? They were so kind to the monster. Every kind word, act, or thought, monster grew an inch smaller, less ugly, less smelly, less offensive. And soon, almost in no time at all, the monster was back to the size when it first came in. But did they stop there? Of course not. They kept on with the kindness until this monster was so tiny. Just one more act of kindness and the monster vanished completely away. And that's based on a story told by the Buddha in the scriptures 2,500 years ago in the Udana. He said, we call those anger-eating monsters. They feed on negativity. Give them anger, they get bigger, more disgusting, more of a problem. Give them kindness, and they get smaller and vanish. Now that is such a powerful story, I don't mind telling it to many of you who have heard it before. Simply because there's so many anger-eating monsters in this world. Anxiety, fear, guilt, they're all anger-eating monsters. Get out of here, you don't belong. They get worse. So how about trying this awareness and kindness? Welcome, monster. Welcome, anxiety. Welcome, fear. Welcome, anger. Instead of, get out, I don't want to be angry. Welcome it from a distance. Ajahn Chah's little story, my teacher, when somebody asked him, they were really had a lot of anger, what should I do with it? He said, very easy. Get a little travel clock like this. Next time you're angry, put it in front of you and time yourself. See how long to be angry for.
See if you can beat your record. See if you can get in Guinness Book of Records. Because straight away, pulling the clock out there was actually almost giving you a separation, giving you a perspective. And not trying to get rid of it, but accepting it, was the kindness part. And they found you can't be angry that long if you practice that little trick. Simply because you have this beautiful combination of mindfulness and kindness to whatever you are experiencing. Because without that kindness, which is another form of letting go, you'll find all these emotional problems people have in the world. Depression, anger, anxiety, fear, loneliness. For those of you who are lonely, thank you, loneliness, for coming to visit me. It's so wonderful to be lonely. I don't have to bother with all those stupid boys and girls I used to know. I can be with me. At last, freedom. I can get up whenever I like, do whatever I like. Sickness. Are you angry at being sick sometimes? Or can you welcome it? If you welcome it, it's amazing. You start to heal very quickly. You try and get rid of it. Tense. And that tension, of course, causes the sickness to continue. It's a tough thing to do, to say welcome. You can stay in my body. You don't have to get out of here. It is a monster which has come into your throne room, into your body. Get out of here, you don't belong. Instead you say welcome. You're aware, you're kind, and you find the fear, the anxiety, the negativity vanishes, and with it healing happens. So this is where we add kindness to the mindfulness, and that's why, you know, I invented the word kindfulness. That is, you might see mindful in the Time magazine. Give a few more years, you have kindful, and you get the full picture. So, what problems do you have in life? Be aware of them. Don't try and get rid of them. Because as soon as you try and get rid of them with negativity, you can't be aware. You're missing most of it. Whatever it is, maybe you're having trouble at school. Maybe you can't find a partner in life. Whatever it is, be aware of it, for goodness sake. Separate yourself. Oh, it's just an emotion I have, a desire, a feeling. And then be kind to it, which means it stays a long time, enough for you to really understand what it's doing to you. And you'll be surprised, just the fact you're kind to it, it starts to get less and less and less. This is not just with emotional stuff. That was about 2 years ago now. A year and a half ago. I was in Toronto. And I was got well enough known in the world to be invited to give a lecture at Toronto University in this major course on mindfulness, mindfulness, medicine, and psychology. So I gave the lecture there, and I just mentioned, look, you've got to include that kindness, otherwise you're missing this powerful extra to being aware, to being mindful. So those of you who have any problems, even physically, be aware, it's not just psychology, it was medicine as well, mindfulness, medicine and psychology, this course in Toronto. Be aware of that sickness, and be kind to it. It's amazing what happens when you have the kindness. I can't go past, whoops, never mind, bye-bye. I can't go past that story if, well, it's okay, leave it alone. Just let it go. Let go of time. I'm free now. I don't know what time. Oh, it's this clock at the back there. But when you're sort of mindful and kind to your body, it really relaxes. And it frees the healing power. The story was, okay, I don't know, probably told this 3 weeks ago or whatever, but having food poisoning, these cramps in your guts, they're really, really painful. Should have gone, and sometimes I can kill you. We should have gone to see a doctor. Instead, I just used my mindfulness and kindness technique. So you're aware of really bad stomach cramps. Really aware of them. And the kindness kept me there.
long enough to see the kindness work. The anger-eating monster grew less. The pain got less, slightly, and less, and less, and less, and less. It just took 20 minutes. After 20 minutes, no pain at all. Food poisoning totally vanished, never came back again. It really vanished, like you were healthy, didn't have any problems with your tummy at all. And I've been trying to work out what happened. To me, I think what actually happened afterwards, because these are bacteria inside of you. I remember seeing pictures of bacteria, you know, these little cells with all these little tentacles coming out of them. And I really thought afterwards that all these little bacteria with all the tentacles coming after them, because I've been doing meditation, mindfulness and kindness, that they were all cross-legged with their tentacles and all sitting meditation quietly in my tummy, not causing any problem anymore. So I thought, I was like, all the bacteria were meditating as well, and that's the reason why they weren't causing trouble. That's the only thing I could imagine, because they never did anything afterwards, which is brilliant. But I've done that many, many times for healing on the body. It actually works, being aware, being kind. Keep the kindness there as well. And then you find the mindfulness really works. So even in emotions, okay, you're here, you're seeing this emotion like in the screen in front of you, please be kind to it. Because if you say, I don't want to be angry, I don't want to be depressed, I don't want to sort of be anxious, that makes it worse. You try it, it won't go away. But you say, anxiety is okay, it's not against the law, it's not against the precepts of being a Buddhist, you can be anxious if you like, so just don't be anxious. Just like, you know, the clock symbol, see how long I can be angry for. Put a clock in front of you, right, see how long I can be anxious for. That gives it the letting it be, the kindness. That gives it the healing. Things vanish and disappear. So any of you have any emotional problems or physical problems, mindfulness actually works with kindness. Not just in front of you, giving some space. It works and you find it's amazing just what you can do. Healing happens. Psychological problems, they get less and they vanish. One of the reasons why people keep coming here. Now, what are you coming here on a Friday night for? Because it works. This is not just, you know, a religion to believe in. This is something you can take home with you, and it actually works. You get much, much better afterwards. And it does also mean you don't have to be coming over here on a Friday night, or you know, listen in on the net. You don't have to pay the psychologist any money. You don't, you know, we don't bulk bill here. We don't bill at all here. So it's totally free. So it's brilliant. And I don't mind. I mean, the medical profession, psychologists, they've got enough clients as it is. They've got too many. So they're very happy that, you know, we can actually take off the burden from the medical establishment. In fact, you know, so many people get healthy and happy here that, you know, we actually save our government so much money that the Department of, what is it, the medicine, or they should actually subsidize this place. We save the government a lot of money. But whatever it is, it's just out of kindness and compassion for you guys. And you'll find you're happier, you're healthier. It's one part of Buddhism which really works. It's not a belief. You can find out right here, right now, in this life. It's brilliant. And it also means you tend not to get so upset and angry anymore, because once you see angry, then over there, you're kind to it. It vanishes. The demon goes away, and it vanishes. And it's amazing, actually, people see that. They used to be angry before, they used to be anxious before, they were guilty before, they can let it go. Yeah, we say forgiveness, but you need to do more than just say, okay, forgive, forgive, forgive. I can't do it. This is how it's done. And you find you're a much happier person, living a much more beautiful life. And when you're happy, I'm happy, and everyone else is happy. So that's what we do it for. So I hope you enjoy mindfulness with a bit of kindness. Thank you. Sadhu, very good. Now, okay, this is another mindfulness and kindness thing. Now, instead of clapping, and you can clap if you like, but in Buddhist we always say sadhu, which means, you know, well done. And instead of going sadhu, 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 remember as I've taught before, follow me, sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. See, it's totally ridiculous, but it's good fun. So that's how we do the three starters at the end of a talk. Okay, we've got some questions. Okay. First of all, questions from overseas. It's always interesting to see how far this one goes. We got from Bulgaria, Sweden, and USA today. Ooh, yeah. Very good. First of all, Stefan from Bulgaria. How long should one stay in the present moment awareness before moving to silent present moment awareness? I've been meditating for touch of this slowly. How long should one stay in present moment awareness before moving to silent present moment awareness? I've been meditating for a long time, yet don't feel ready to move on to the second stage of meditation. For those people who've read my books on meditation, you never move on to another stage of meditation. You move in to the next stage of meditation. So you just stay where you are, Stefan, in the present moment, and if you really get into this present moment, you really get right into it, you find right in the center of present moment awareness, you find silence. Right in the middle of now. N-O-W is this beautiful O, nothing. And right in the middle of the O is space. Emptiness. Okay, that's a bit of a trick with language, but nevertheless, in the middle of the present moment, there's nothing to say. You need some time to actually to make a comment on what has just happened. You need time to actually to say something where you want to go next. If you're right in the middle of the present moment, all speech stops. That's why many of you have got into this present moment sometimes, right here, and you're speechless, you're silent, it's beautiful. So don't try and move on, just get the present moment, Stefan, more full, more deep, more intense, and then silence will just be there, right in the center of the present moment. Don't move on, sacrificing the present moment for something else. Go right inside. And those of you who heard the meditation teachings in full, right in the middle of the present moment, even if you don't go looking for it, you find your breath. Right in the middle of the breath, you find the delightful breath, which is brilliant. It's so enjoyable. Right inside the delightful breath, you go right inside of it, you find this beautiful light we call the nimittas. Beautiful lights. Right inside the middle of the lights, you find this incredible jhana state. Always go in. Never go on in meditation. Always going in. Wherever you are right now, go right inside. The simile was like the lotus simile. Lotus is closed up at night time. If you look at a lotus which is closed up at night time, you would never believe such beautiful petals will be inside. Such fragrant fragrance will be inside that petal. But you just open it up, layer after layer after layer. You go right inside the lotus. And that's where you find the really beautiful petals right inside. That lotus is you. Ugly on the outside, but fragrant on the inside. Wow. That's what it feels like, you know. If I'm a hopeless meditator, I've got anxiety, fear, all these terrible defilements. Yeah, on the outside, but you go deep inside of each one of you, you've got the most beautiful mind inside of you. And from Sweden, is there any other suitable word that can replace the word mindfulness? Thank you. Sometimes say awareness, mindfulness, but again, I like to add the kindness, and of course it just fits, you get kindfulness. So from Sweden, yeah, replace the word mindfulness with kindfulness. Because it's a simple word, kindness and mindfulness, put them together, and it just adds that beauty to what is sometimes a very bland word. And it's got no life to it, no joy, no love to it. And you can't have, you know what it's like sometimes, some doctors, you go there and it's just like going to see a robot. Now wash your symptoms, fine, take, you know, 3 Panadol and come back to me, you know, if it doesn't go away next week. It's just like, you know, going to a sort of an answering machine. But some doctors, some therapists, they're just such kind people. And you go to them and it's a kindness which cures you. They just spend time talking with you, really listening to you, and it doesn't really matter what they say, it's just someone who's been kind to you. That's why one of my, not really a friend, but I met him a couple of times, Professor Jofi, I think his name is, he used to be the head hematologist at Charlie Gardner's Hospital, treating many people with cancer. He got this John Curtin medal, which I also got, so that's why I met him once at a ceremony. And he got his medal, I think it was also West Australian of the Year, I think, once. And he got his accolades because head hematologist, Charlie Gardner's Hospital, yes, very good chemotherapy, radiation therapy, surgery, you know, top of the range, all of that stuff, but there was something missing. Kindness. Because people going in there, and some of you may have gone in there, you get your chemotherapy, thank you, see you next week. And that's not enough. So what he did, he was first of all done by Brown's Dairy. I don't mind advertising that because they did a good thing. They sponsored it first of all. I got some more sponsors since, I think. An alternative therapy centre in the middle of the Charles Garden Hospital. Homeopathy, Reiki, foot massage, as I often say, anything weird, you can get there. And he said in his speech, all of his friends, you know, all these other professors, hard-nosed scientists, they thought he'd gone crazy, gone soft in the head. You know, this is weird stuff. You know, it's not proven. What are you doing it for? And he said, well, look, I don't care if it's proven or not. If someone is giving you a foot massage for half an hour, they're caring for you. If someone is spending time doing Reiki on you, at the very least, someone is caring about you. He said, that is going to work. And of course, you're listening to me intently because you know it does work. Just someone, you know, just spending time with you, trying to heal you, by itself, that is therapeutically powerful. So that's why the kindness he was putting into Charlie Gardner's Hospital. That is why, and any of you are nurses, you know, it's just so frustrating you haven't got the time to hold somebody's hand and just talk to them about nothing whatsoever. You know, you have to just do so much. You know, recording this, you know, putting it all down on pieces of paper, you've got so many patients you've got to see and outcomes or whatever it is you're trying to fulfill. You don't have that time for being kind. In the old days, those kind nurses, they were better than injections, just having a kind nurse just sitting around talking to you. That works. So, now you all know that kindness heals. And that also works in psychology as well. A kind therapist who can just, you know, smile at you and be with you, be a friend to you, that is probably as important as everything else they've ever learnt in university. So, kindfulness is such an important, just saying that word just adds a compassion into the world. And that's so, so important. Sometimes in our world it's just so cold. Kindness doesn't cost that much and it helps so much. Anyway, Nick from USA. You teach to be passively kindful. Good on you, Nick. Passively kindness to all the conditions of the world. In the real world, being smart and successful probably means being able to manipulate and control the world to your advantage. Could you please comment? Being manipulating the world to your advantage, if it's just to my advantage, it's to no one else's advantage, we all lose. Yeah, manipulate the world to our advantage. Not to my advantage, not even to your advantage, but to our advantage. Basic little teaching, when people get married, get the... Always, you know, I do marriage ceremonies, look at the husband, no, just the wife first of all, new wife, they've just been married, just exchanged the rings, look at her and say, from now on you're a married woman, mustn't think of yourself. Yes, I won't think of myself, I'm married now. Guy, now you're married, you mustn't think of yourself. And I say this, I do this over in Singapore, in other countries as well, the boy always hesitates. But eventually comes around and says, yes, okay, I won't think of myself. And then the killer question, you must not think of yourself. Say to the boy, you must not think of your wife anymore. The wife, you must not think of your husband anymore. That's a killer. Because they get so confused. And the answer is, once you're married, you mustn't think of yourself. You mustn't think of the other. You must only think of us. Think of us. And they get it. Oh, yeah, why do we think of that? Because too often, if you're in a relationship, are you sacrificing yourself for your partner? That doesn't work. If you're selfish and just see what you can get out of it, that doesn't work. The relationship is always about us. Any problem? Our problem. Not his problem, not her problem, not my problem, our problem. Then we can fix it. That's what kindfulness means. So, in the real world, to be successful, it's we have to be successful. Not just one person, we have to be successful. It's our world. I'm not going to sacrifice myself for you guys. I'm not going to be selfish and just do what I want to do. I'm teaching because of us. If you're happy, I'm happy. If you're successful, I'm successful. If you've got no problems, then don't bother me. So it's all about us. You know that. So this is why. The answer to the question, be kindful, but also be wise to realize that it's all about being kindful to us. Being kindful to our world. It's not just about United States. The United States can't live without others. It's just like Buddhists can't live without the Christians and the Muslims. So it's not about Buddhism. It's about us, the whole world, atheists included. Do you get it? So that means that, yeah, you manipulate, but not to your advantage. You manipulate to our advantage. We're all in it together. Okay, I hope that answered the questions. Maybe just in the style, which wasn't expected, but that's what we're here for. Any questions from our audience here? Give you a chance. Yes, thank you.
Ajahn, I'm just wondering, what do the words mean when we chant at the end?
Oh, the chant, it means we... We're just paying respects to the Buddha, and then the Dhamma and the Sangha. Arahan Sama Sambuddha. We got it in the chanting book somewhere. Buddha was enlightened, and we pay respects to the Buddha. The Dhamma has been well taught, we pay respects to that Dhamma. The Sangha is well practiced, we pay respects to the Sangha. So that's, it's a Buddhist thing that sometimes people say, what do you do to become a Buddhist? And it's usually the three refuges. And that's been there for centuries. So that's, going to refuge to the Buddha, Dhamma and the Sangha. Okay, does that answer it, sort of? Okay. Anything else? Okay, I'm sure there'll be so many questions afterwards, because there'll be a big line here in a few minutes. Such is the way. So thank you all for listening, and now we can pay our respects to Buddhangs, Arahant Sama Sambuddho, paying respects to Buddha Dhamma Sangha, if you wish. You don't have to, but as I mentioned, I think 3 weeks ago, science has shown, and this is research, people get me the articles and show it to me, if you bow, then nitrous oxide is secreted in your brain. And nitrous oxide, you all know, is a laughing gas. You actually get a cheap and free high every time you bow. Now, being a monk, I bow so much, that's what it's done to my brain. That explains a lot. Too much nitrous oxide has got inside my brain.